Let's take time now to put today's ruling by Judge Stephen Rhodes into some historic context. How does the painful journey into Chapter 9 bankruptcy fit into Detroit's past, present, and most importantly, its future? We're joined by someone who has covered the news in Michigan for some five decades, Michigan Radio's political analyst, Jack Lessenberry. Welcome, Jack.
Good to be here.
Jack, what do you think Judge Rhodes' ruling means not only for the city of Detroit, but for the entire state of Michigan in historic terms?
Well, it's going to take a while to digest. He's got a 140-page memorandum, I think they're calling it, and I certainly haven't read or digested all of it yet. But as I said the other day, it may not be the beginning of the end of Detroit's troubles, but it's sort of the end of the beginning. It's clear now the bankruptcy will go forward. It looks like there's going to be pension cuts and sort of a lot of pain, but Detroit had to get there. This is hardly surprising to anybody given the debt structure. One of the first things the judge said was that Detroit could no longer meet its obligations or meet the basic services it had to provide citizens. This has been building for a long, long time. It's not one mayor or two mayors. It's over at least 40 years. There's a lot. There's a lot of reasons why this happened, and the trick is for all of us, for everybody in state, to fix it so that we have a viable central city that is not a drag on the state's prosperity.
Do you think Chapter 9 will give Detroit that clean slate from which to rebuild, or I'm wondering, are expectations too high that this bankruptcy will be the medicine to cure Detroit's ills?
Well, it depends on what expectations are. You know, when General Motors and Chrysler went through bankruptcy proceedings 4 years ago, 5 years ago, at the end of the day, when they emerged, they still had a sellable product. They had cars and trucks that they could sell that people wanted to buy. But it's not clear where Detroit will go at the end of the day of bankruptcy. When bankruptcy's over, the city may be shorn of its debts, or most of its debts, probably some of its assets as well, but it will still be a very, very poor city with tens of thousands of derelict buildings and a poor, poorly educated population. And how this city goes forward and becomes economically viable and even stays solvent, of course, it's not going to be allowed to borrow money anymore. It's certainly not going to be able to borrow money anymore. That is the, you know, $18 billion question.
Jack, you have covered the city for many decades, and I'm wondering, what have you
sort of
felt?
5 decades, what I think.
Five. Time flies, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, when you're not having fun.
What have you felt as all of this has unfolded, from the emergency manager and the city's filing bankruptcy and now today with the ruling? What has that felt like for you?
Well, I think, you know, this is not an overnight shock. I think, looking at it, I think to some extent I'm encouraged by the lack of hysteria among Detroiters and among people in general. We thought we might see more screaming and yelling and posturing. There's really been sort of remarkably little of that. Most of the sort of naysayers on city council didn't run for re-election. Of course, we don't know enough about the new city council yet, but I think there is a universal feeling that this is very serious, that there's going to be pain, that something has to be done, whether people like it or not. And there's going to be a lot here that nobody likes. But I think Detroiters, far more than 10 or certainly 20 years ago, are sort of facing up to the cold, bleak light of the aftermath of a lot of spending that wasn't backed up with realistic assumptions.
You know, Jack, it often feels as though the city of Detroit has become kind of a lab rat for municipal bankruptcy for the entire world to dissect and examine and pass judgment and take photos of ruined buildings and empty fields. Do you think this Chapter 9 journey can give the city a new narrative?
Well, it is one more chapter in a continuing narrative. Detroit, even when times were good in Detroit, in the booming 40s and 50s, the world to which I was born, they said that when America caught cold, Detroit caught pneumonia. It was always sort of the canary in the coal mine, because a car was the most easily postponed purchase. And when times started to get tough, people stopped buying cars and people would be laid off. Well, most cars aren't produced in Detroit anymore. Or most cars aren't produced in America anymore. Even the cars that are bought in America are either produced elsewhere, a majority of them, or are made by foreign auto manufacturers. And the thing that, of course, people were most concerned about, the sort of underlying narrative, is the narrative of race. Detroit is a nearly all African-American city, well over 80% of the population, surrounded by the rest of the state being more than 90% white, whatever white means these days. But there's been a lot, there's been surprisingly little racial recrimination. And of course, Detroiters, a majority, 55% of Detroiters, just elected a white mayor, and not all city council is African-American anymore. And for the most part, people in the suburbs and outstate are not saying the kind of racially divisive things that were very common in the 70s and 80s. But this is always sort of in the background, and there is still some feeling among Detroiters that that white people built the city and sort of used it up and left it and left them sort of holding the bag. And just about everybody in Detroit believes there is some truth in that.
Looking at the whole state of Michigan, Jack, what do you think needs to happen to give everyone in Michigan an understanding that, in your words, as you put it in your commentary, they have a stake in the best possible outcome for Detroit?
Well, probably the easiest thing for people to see is that, you know, if Detroit is fixed, the state's bond rating is going to be better. That affects the economies and the investment possibilities of everybody in the state. And also, it's going to be easier to attract businesses to Michigan, whether they come to Detroit or not. Even though Grand Rapids is doing very well, even though Holland, other parts of the state are doing very well, and we have all these flourishing resort areas, if you have a central city that is a national symbol of despair and destruction and dysfunction and crime, it casts a pall over the entire state of Michigan. And if that gets fixed, I mean, nobody thinks that Detroit is going to turn into Paris or Boston or Seattle in the next 5 years. But if the city can clearly seem to be sort of on the upswing, this will make a huge difference both psychologically and financially. But there are many problems other than the bankruptcy will deal with a crushing load of debt, even if it deals with it painfully. But there are lots of other problems, and the one problem that not only Detroit, but a lot of other places face, all of Michigan face, is that there are no longer going to be a state that has high-paying, vast amounts of high-paying jobs for unskilled labor, brawn-based, muscle-based economy. That's all over in the state. And people are going to have to be highly educated. They're going to have to be entrepreneurial. And nobody has really completely figured out how to do that in any place, including Ann Arbor.
Michigan Radio's political analyst, Jack Lessenberry. As always, a pleasure. Thank you so much, Jack.
Pleasure to run my mouth with you.